Plus, we got Hawks tickets coming your way. Hawks passes, I should say, to the convention. Courtesy of Mathnasium, changing lives through math. Get convention passes at ChicagoBlackhawks.com. And I've got one of your last chances coming up. Let's see, what time is that going to be happening? They didn't tell me. This hour.
Oh, wow.
This hour. Okay, that's a big
deal. Stay close, yeah. As we've been trained to do.
Yes, exactly. Well, I have put a cheesy DJ guy in the closet right now.
Good, thank you.
I have. This is one of the humans I respect the most on Earth. And George Will is joining us right now, who, as I mentioned earlier, has been a voice of conscience for Republicans and for conservatives for the better half of the last century. And for if you've read George, watched his work on television, you know that he has been, and I'm speaking like you're not here right now, George, so pardon me for a second, but he has always been very consistent in his dedication to those central core conservative values. And today you have made some news in our world in which everything is news. So if a Kardashian gets a cold, it is news. But you wrote this sad, embarrassing wreck of a man in an op-ed piece about Donald Trump and his meeting with Vladimir Putin today. And you're getting a lot of pushback, obviously, from other Republicans and people who call themselves conservatives. What do you think has happened here? Why are Republicans so reticent to criticize Donald Trump when it is so obvious, it doesn't obviously stand for what they stand for?
Because they're frightened individually and they're frightened collectively. Individually, they're afraid of being singled out by name in a presidential tweet, which, regardless of the merits of the accusation in the tweet, will probably permanently alienate at least a third of their core voters. Which is enough to defeat them in a general election in almost every case. Collectively, they're worried that if the president decides that the Republican caucus in Congress is no longer friendly to him, he will turn upon Congress, campaign against it. This will depress Republican morale and turnout in the fall elections, costing the Republicans control of both houses. That's the basic reason.
Isn't that
it's not that they don't know what they think. Almost all of them are appalled, but they're appalled, shall we say, delicately.
Privately, is that what you hear when you talk with them? That they like his court pick, they like the pro-business platform, the tax cuts, deregulation, that kind of thing, but that they're privately not agreeing with them on a lot of else.
Well, that's right. I mean, they love the court pick, and they, in a sense, they trust his judgment selecting judges because he's promised not to exercise his judgment. He's promised to pick all his court positions will be filled from a list provided by him by the Federalist Society, a very distinguished, now four decades old conservative group. They trust him on the deregulatory agenda because he inherited that from the Republican Party. They trust him on tax cuts, again, because that's Republican orthodoxy. But the wild attack on the mores and patterns and norms of civic discussion in the society, they do not like. They hate the protectionism, because big government doesn't get any bigger or any bossier than it is when it's telling people with tariffs, which are taxes on Americans collected at the border, when it's using tariffs to tell Americans what they can buy, in what quantities, and at what cost.
Let me ask you if you believe, because I firmly believe this, that he really would prefer to have a Democratic Congress because it gives him a foil. It gives him somebody, gives him energy to play off of, because really this is much more about performance art than it is about governing.
Well, I think that you have a point there, although I have a feeling that I don't think this will happen, but were the Democrats to take both houses of Congress in November, by the middle of December he would be a liberal Democrat in the sense that, well, I don't think he has any serious objection. He was contributing to Democrats for 30 years. He was, to say no more, has had trouble articulating conservative principles. So I think he'd find that Chuck and Nancy, as he calls Mr. Schumer and Ms. Pelosi when he's in a good mood, he'd find that he had a lot to deal with them.
That's in your piece today, you talk about the fact that he wouldn't release his taxes. That's kind of coming back up into the conversation here, because it is one of those moments. There are so many things. There's so much flare and chaff, to use an aviation defense analogy here, that so much distraction in the air. We're never quite sure what to look at. We're never quite sure what the target is, whether you're in the press or you're in law enforcement or whatever, if you're looking for a story here or a crime that's been committed. It's very hard. Or what his intent would be. Let's stop short of a crime. What makes him do what he does? And in this particular case, he did not release his taxes. And you make the point, and I think a lot of people are thinking this as well, is there something in there about his businesses being either, well-funded by, or he makes a considerable amount of money from either Russians living in America or the Russian economy?
Well, first of all, we don't know how much money he makes because we don't know how wealthy he is. His estimates of his wealth have ranged from about $3 billion to $10 billion, but he has also said that his estimate of his wealth depends on how he feels on a particular day,
correct,
which is a curious way of calculating numbers. Second, it has been widely rumored that after his fourth or fifth or sixth bankruptcy, I've forgotten quite how many there were, he was understandably found it difficult to get normal prudential financial institutions to lend him money, and therefore he might have been forced to go hat in hand, if you will, to some unsavory sources of money, which would include Russian oligarchs with connections to the Putin regime. That is a speculation, but frankly, it's a speculation that is sensible and encouraged by his refusal to release the tax returns, because in his refusal to comply with this well-established norm of presidential candidates, he is telling us he has something that he wants to keep concealed. So the question is not, is he hiding something, but what is he hiding?
Interesting. You saw, I don't know if you saw, former CIA Director Leon Panetta also came out today saying that he believes there's something, a Democrat for sure, but someone, he believes that there is might be something bigger that intimidates the president in the presence of Putin, that it is more than maybe just strongman worship or mistakenly used words that, you know, allow him to present one thing here in front of Putin and then another thing at home and play both sides or try to, both sides of the fence, that there is something bigger. Do you think it comes down to something financial, or what is your belief?
I almost hope that that's the worst that it comes down to, because Mr. Putin might have something, I don't know what it is, and I don't want to speculate on it, that is even more intimidating to Mr. Trump than that. Leon Panetta, vastly experienced congressman, secretary of defense, White House budget official, CIA director, vastly experienced man, temperate and moderate, would not raise these questions if they were not questions now being raised by extremely experienced and serious people.
Well, the president today, he started off our day, and I do like this because there's always something in the morning, and he's feeding us a number of times a day. And he tweeted this morning basically that there are other higher people in the intelligence community who are telling him that the Russians weren't the only ones involved. Now, or weren't involved. What, Dan Coats, somebody you're familiar with as well, Indiana, former Indiana senator, and was congressman, then a senator, been in Washington a very long time, a respected guy, was on the Senate Intelligence Committee for a number of years, went over and looked at all kinds of evidence during, whether it was Benghazi or the other stuff, they would send him over because he's got this background in it. And is there somebody higher than him? And, Dan Coats had to defend himself. I mean, who is it?
Yeah, look, I don't know how to say this politely, so I'll just say it. When the president says that unnamed people by the dozens are applauding him, that's just more Trump noise. It has no claim to be believed. We know that the president began his presidency the day after his inauguration with a demonstrable fabrication about the size of the crowd that attended his inauguration. He has not stopped fabricating things since then. I'm trying to avoid the L word, but it's not easy to avoid.
No, it's really
in fact, I don't think I'll avoid it. I think when he says that legions of high intelligence people are applauding him, I think he's lying.
All right, let me, George Will, Let me, so first of all, thank you for all of your service to this country and your service to journalism. But I will ask you this. Is this ever going to be okay? Are we going to make it through this?
Well, remember, this is a temporary president because they're all temporary. Thank God for the 22nd Amendment. So two more years or six more years. So we've had some pretty inadequate leaders before. Good statesmen will not always be at the helm, Madison said with considerable understatement in the Federalist Papers long ago. So this country is, you know, there's more to America than the presidency. There's more to American government than Washington. There's more to America than government. So I think the country is healthier than the public sector at the moment.
All right. George, we'll leave it there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
George. Appreciate your time.
Glad to be with you.